Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, we have a coronavirus safety brief. Grab your first line supervisor because coronavirus is in the United States and we're going to have a full-blown safety stand down on the show. Round number two, a real-life Top Gun moment led to one Marine commander being relieved from his F-18 squadron post. Round number three, a dude living in Arizona was one of the main leaders of Al-Qaeda. Yeah, that Al-Qaeda. This story is absolutely insane. It seems like it's from Hollywood or a made-for-Netflix type of series, but it's not. It's real life, and it happened this last week. Round number four, some absolute legends were on the field for the Super Bowl. Four 100-year-old veterans participated in the coin toss. We're going to tell you about one of those men and then take a walk down Super Bowl memory lane. And all of that is going to be brought to you by our good friends at Roman. Roman Swipes, folks, we've been telling you about them for a while. If you're having sex and you're not having sex with Roman Swipes, you're making a mistake because everybody likes sex and they like it to last a little longer than like a minute and 30 seconds. Sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 7 minutes. Maybe if you're getting crazy, you'll even go to 9 minutes. Who knows? But you can do all that with Roman Swipes because they are clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, and fast acting, and they don't require a prescription. Roman can send you swipes in a discreet, unmarked package, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you might need it. Swipes are great, and they'll not transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying, and they're super easy to use. Just take those bad boys out of the packet, swipe it on your member, and let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. When you go to GetRoman.com/zero, you can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. If you use the link GetRoman.com/zero, that's GetRoman.com/zero. Super Bowl week is over now. Barstool Life is getting back to normal. Kate and I are no longer doing our radio show in the morning. We're doing it in the evening again at a fresh new time of 5 to 6. So if you listen to this show, you don't usually listen to the Chaps and Kate show on Sirius XM. You can tune in at 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. That is 1700, 1800 for you military types on the East Coast standard time.
How you feel about that?
Oh, I love it, dude. I'm so pumped about the new time slot. You, Catherine?
Yeah, it's only an hour difference, like an hour earlier, but now I'll be home. Like, just getting home at, like, 7-ish instead of 8 or 9-ish, I'll be able to get to my bocce league on time.
Oh, perfect.
I'll be able to make some more friends in the neighborhood. So, yeah, no, I'm excited for it. Looking forward to it.
I think it makes the biggest difference for me because, like, after doing radio for basically 3 hours, because I do Barstool Radio the first 2 hours beforehand, I can be so burnt out. And then, like, on Mondays and Thursdays when I'm putting together, like, the episode and the clips and stuff, I get so burnt out. Having that extra hour is going to be dynamite.
It's a treat. It's a delight.
Yeah,
good.
Not rushing to basketball practice and all that shit's going to be great too for family life for me. I am excited about that. Cons, you do something every year that I think is fucking awesome with your battle buddy that you were in Iraq with, Murder Soup, who's been on the podcast before. Tell us about your snowboarding trip.
Yeah, so it's my buddy Rob, and we were explaining there were some new folks around town this year on the trip, and they were explaining, or we were explaining to them why I go there every year. And Rob was ROTC, so he had one less year of a commitment. So he left Fort Hood where we were stationed. And I was just sitting around one day, and I was like, I texted him. I was like, hey, man, miss hanging out with you. Hope you're doing well in Salt Lake City. He's like, hey, you snowboard, right? Why don't you just come out for a trip? That was 10 years ago. I'd just been doing it every year. It wasn't the first year something I said, all right, I'm going to do this forever. It was just happened, and then it was such a good time. He said, hey, come on back. And I'd just been going back every year for the last 10 years.
Wow, a whole decade now going out there. And it looked beautiful. It looked lovely.
Oh, it's so gorgeous. It's so gorgeous.
You still got it? You still able to?
Oh, yeah. I could still rip it up. It was funny. I posted a tweet with a short little video of going down one of the tracks. And I said, Barstool Boarding podcast is going to be starting. totally joking. We're not starting an extreme sports podcast, but so many people reached out, DM me like, "Hey man," they were like giving me like their resume.
That'd be super gnar, yeah. Dude. It's like that.
Nope. I know we're expanding, but we are not starting a Barstool Extreme Sports podcast. But yeah,
now Cons, I got to ask you a question about the snowboarding. Are you worried? I think that you're on the precipice, or you might even be there, of being too old to snowboard.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything.
Because that feels like it's a young, like you can be the old guy at the skate park. That's a young man's game. And I think that pretty soon you're going to get those angsty teens like, who's this old poser on the snowboard?
That's
hey,
a fair concern.
This is our hill.
No, yeah. I guess the one thing I would say is you're pretty much covered up. Your face is covered up. So it's tough to determine age unless you don't have any sort of face mask on. So I think I buy myself a little more time there. But I've also seen older people on the mountain who snowboard. You got to remember, snowboarding relatively is a very young sport, so you're not going to have a lot of old people by just the nature of that. And actually, shout out, we were talking about how Jake Burton, basically the pioneer, the grandfather of snowboarding, just recently passed away suddenly.
Yep.
RIP to him. But I think it's something we mentioned how like 10 years ago we'd be in the terrain park ripping it up, doing, you know, jumps and all sorts of different things in there. Yeah. And now we just stay away from that. Like, so you just, you shift how you spend your day.
Yeah.
But I can't wait until we're like in our 80s or whatever, and there's going to be some dude wearing like a red 2-9 hat rolling down a snowboarding mountain, like with his board strapped to his feet and just old as shit going down the mountain. That's going to be dope.
Yeah. And I'll be in the weeds throwing sticks. Mm-hmm. Onto the, I'll say you're too old. That'll be my contribution.
I bet you are going to be a surly old woman, Kate.
For sure, absolutely.
You're going to find all sorts of things to complain about.
Alone with my cats, that's going to be it. So
I can see Kate being the type of old lady who has her coffee cup and she brags about how long it's been since she's put soap to it, like the old crusty gunnies.
What?
That's extremely specific.
My sleeves will be rolled.
Yeah.
You didn't have any of those people that in like your battalion or whatever that had their same coffee cup and they're like, oh, there's no reason to wash this coffee cup.
Oh, God. Because
all they had is black coffee and like their white mug was essentially stained black on the inside. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any of those
folks?
Oh, I do
that with my cereal bowl.
That's a little more gross.
I'm kidding. That's a joke. But you all seem to believe it, so.
The last thing I'll say, it's just interesting how things do change as you get older. So I've gotten to know all of Rob's friends really well. They're all great guys, great group of people that most of them I see every year, and they're always around. And we were at a birthday party Friday night, and it's just interesting how 10 years ago the party looked a lot different than this year. There was a bunch of little kids running around.
Yeah.
People have wives and, you know, long relationships, and just very different scene than 10 years ago.
Times are changing.
Yeah, they are. Mm. But as much as they change, they stay the same.
There you go.
No doubt about it. Let's get into some of the actual topics of the day. And this one, the first one, coronavirus.
Coronavirus! We're all going to die. Round number one.
To all the young people out there, real quick, you cannot, and I say this because I actually heard someone recently say this. I'm not making this up. You cannot get coronavirus from drinking Coronas.
If this is about Corona, if I hear one more hacky.
I'm just saying, I heard there was a
Cons
someone.
Cons loves it. This is like the third time he's mentioned it.
Have I mentioned it?
The fifth time I've heard him.
All right, well, I just want to make sure all the young bucks out there, all the boots out there listening, know you can continue to drink your Coronas. You know, shout out Dom Toretto.
Indeed. Yeah.
Well, coronavirus is one of those things that's really taken over the news. And even though there's not too many like active cases, I think in the entire world there's 1,500. And whenever you put that into a global perspective, 1,500 cases of anything is not huge.
No, it's
but
like 17,000 in China right now.
Oh,
and well, then there's
wrong.
A lot more worldwide. Yeah, it's getting pretty bad right now. So
it's spreading all over the place. We're going to do a little Corona goofing just so you know. There is major cities. I think Wuhan has how many people that live in there? I think they say 11 million. And then Shanghai was shut down for a period of 2 weeks. And they have 21 million people that live in Shanghai. And it's spreading all over the place. California recently had the first United States version of two, like, people-to-people transformation, not like a zoonotic thing. But
yeah, there's 11 people-to-people confirmed. Transformation. 11 confirmed in the U.S. now.
11 confirmed. And now people in communities like where I live in San Antonio, people are up in arms because there's Americans that are getting evacuated from places like China and I believe the Philippines too. They are bringing them back to the United States, then making sure that they're quarantined. And one of the spots that they are coming to is here in San Antonio. So this weekend, Joint Base San Antonio, this news comes to us from KINS 5, which is a local San Antonio news station. Joint Base San Antonio said that they plan to house up to 300 people on base here in a little community called the Gateway. And so whenever you're going through military orders or if you're in transit out of San Antonio, you'll stay at this hotel called the Gateway. That's where I was supposed to stay whenever I first moved here. It's very common for people to go. If you've gone through Lackland, you've stayed at the Gateway Inn. Well, they're having all these people. Well, the Department of Homeland Security or HHS said that they didn't say anything about the coronavirus in the actual news release that people were coming here. They were really, really vague, which I think is actually worse. What do you guys think? If you know people are coming here for the coronavirus and the news release that people are coming here for the coronavirus doesn't even mention the coronavirus, to me, that makes you a little more nervous.
Yeah, it's like, what aren't you telling me?
What do I
really have to be worried about?
Lying by omission. You're not mentioning the fact that it's like you might as well be lying about whether or not they have it or not.
Mm-hmm. They should have mentioned it, but in local politicians and stuff are confirming like there's a misconception that it's people with the coronavirus coming to San Antonio, but it's people who don't have any symptoms. And they're like quarantining people first before they can even come over and all this and that. But still, you're right. Just with everything in the news, you would think they would make that abundantly clear.
Right.
And just be super transparent about it.
Well,
and
I wonder how much they don't know.
The clarification statement is what they should have led with. They should have led with, these people are coming, but they have no signs of it whatsoever. Because you guys know, in a military community, especially like base housing, where they have all these different next doors now and Facebook groups and things like that where you can hop on the group, misinformation spreads on social media like absolute wildfire. Like you could totally see that some spouse somewhere put up, oh yeah, I saw some dude coughing at the PX and he was just walking around coughing on all the different types of food that they have at the PX and now we're all going to get coronavirus. That would spread like wildfire on base.
You know what's got to suck? Being the kid who's staying at the Gateway and you go out to the playground and the other kid's like, unclean. Like you are the dirty kid in class now.
Oh, no.
Even though you've done nothing wrong and you're not sick and you're fine. Yeah,
dude,
you're probably getting shit.
I had to go there to get a prescription filled and there was a guy walking around with one of those masks on, like just the regular face mask, and I was like, oh, that's a coronavirus guy.
They're everywhere here in New York.
I saw a bunch of those folks on my flight last night. What do you guys think about that, wearing a mask like that?
I mean, can't hurt any extra.
I guess.
You go to town. My favorite was the one with the hole poked in it so someone could smoke a cigarette yeah. out of it. That would be me.
I'll say something on the show that I've never said. I hate all forms of PPE. I think PPE makes you look like a nerd. Every single type. Whether you're wearing a plate carrier, if you're wearing a bulletproof vest or anything like that, I think you look like a big old dork when you're wearing PPE.
Yeah,
glasses, mask, anything.
I'd rather have tinnitus and the coronavirus than wear a mask and earplugs, you know? I don't want to be that.
I would imagine if I was in a place where they shot off nerve agents, I'd be like, I'd rather convulse on the ground than look like an idiot in that mask.
Right.
Yeah, why don't you try to put that gas mask on? Nope, I'm all set.
Yeah.
And just to show you I'm all good, I've grown out this beard, so I can't even get proper suction on it, so it doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't imagine being the commands, because you know commands on Lackland and all over the place are going to have to give out these safety briefs of what they have to do, and you really don't know a whole lot about it. It would be a terrible situation to be in an elite, have to deal with coronavirus, especially coming to your base. There's going to be people all over the place that are freaking out.
Right, because I think there's still a lot of unknown, so the fact that you're going to have your soldiers, your airmen, your Marines asking you questions that you don't have the answers to, that's probably one of the worst things as a leader, to be asked a question that you know as soon as the question is asked, you don't have a legitimate response, because then you have to say something along the lines of, you know, I'll get back to you, or you definitely don't want to make up a response, but that's really just an uneasy feeling when you don't have an answer to every question you're asked.
I just, speaking of those questions, like Joint Base San Antonio, whoever is in charge of their PR or whatever, because the people reaching out to Joint Base San Antonio who are angry about this are probably fucking nuts and like, we're all going to die. The people who are really freaking out are the ones reaching out to Joint Base. I bet they are dealing with some absolute nutballs right now. So,
oh, yeah. Godspeed. And with all the different conspiracy theories, because we don't talk about that enough.
It's QAnon.
there's a lot of people in the military who are big time conspiracy people.
Oh, yeah.
They love that shit. So having it come here to San Antonio, I can't wait to see what happens. I hope the virus gets taken out pretty soon, obviously. I don't think that anybody is pro. That's a bold stance for us to be the first anti-coronavirus podcast.
Look at us. That's a good, good for us. You can't see it, but I'm patting myself on the back right
Making
now.
Strides.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Look at
so
us.
So be careful out there with the coronavirus, folks. We'll keep you up to date because I am making fun of people who are obsessed with it. But if you've listened to me on the radio or anything, I am legit loving reading all the different articles. And I am seriously blown away that Wuhan has been able to build almost build that hospital in 10 days.
Oh, yeah.
Like a 1,000-bed hospital in 10 days. They are building it.
Crazy town.
That's
what a working party. My goodness.
I couldn't even get somebody here in San Antonio to build me a fence.
Somebody better ship me a hospital right now.
Right damn now.
Yes, Staff Sergeant.
Give me 18 Lance Corporals. Staff Sergeant, I was trying to build the incubator room. Yeah. Can't do it. Lost it.
Yeah. A noble effort.
A noble effort indeed. That one might fuck me up for the rest of the podcast. Let's move on to round two.
You can have any brew you want, as long as it's a Corona.
All right, round number two comes to us from our good friend. I think you've actually been on his podcast before, Kate. Andrew Dyer, and he's from the San Diego Union-Tribune, right? You've been on that show.
Yes, a delight.
Yeah, he's lovely a delightful talk. Fella, and he covers all things that is military, especially in the San Diego area. Well, he told a story that immediately brings up a Top Gun reference, because there's an F-18 squadron commander this week who they had a retirement ceremony. And I imagine retirement ceremonies or any type of ceremony whenever you're in an F-18 or F-16 or whatever type of squadron that you're in with fighter jets, you're going to be a little bit – you're going to have a little pomp and circumstance, and you're going to go a little bit high and to the right. Because if we know anything about F-18 fired pilots, just from the ones that we've talked to or that we've been around, they are – a flamboyant group, I would say.
To say the least.
And especially, this was the final flight of this F-18, like this specific kind of plane, because they're transitioning to the F-35Cs. So this was like, they've been using these planes forever. It's the final flight. You got to do something a little special. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm getting a new car tomorrow, I might Thelma and Louise with the old CRV.
That might be a little dangerous.
Okay. But you know what I mean? I might hit a curb, pop a wheelie, do something fun.
Yeah. You don't go down to Daytona Beach and rent a moped and not try to put that bitch on one wheel. Like, right. You just don't do it.
Especially,
and if it's the last one of the F-18, and the F-18 is one of the more famous fighter jets of all time. I bet if you asked anybody on the street, like, name the name of an actual fighter jet, F-18 is the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
I would bet.
I might say F-14 just because of the movie Top Gun. That might be everybody's only look into any sort of naval aviation. So,
well, the F-18 here, this guy, the commander of it, he's a lieutenant colonel. He was in the back seat of the fighter jet, because if you don't know F-18, there's a front guy who is our front person who is the pilot, and then there's one in the back that's like the navigator. And if you've seen that on movies like Top Gun, well, the guy in the back was the commander. And whenever they were going through this different retirement ceremony, they... in the words of Top Gun, kind of buzzed the tower. They went way too low and way too fast right near the crowd. And because of that, the commander was actually fired from his role as the commanding officer of this squadron.
Which, it sucks. This guy, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Featherstone.
Great name.
He was such a good name. He was in the back seat. And the FAA and the tower neither complained. They still didn't get any complaints about it. It was just the fact that he did it, that they fired this guy, like, get the fuck out of here. Whose decision was that? Well, you got a wad.
Yeah, as
your
lieutenant colonel,
a wad.
You don't have too many people above you, at least relative to anybody in the area. So I'm kind of curious how anyone even found out about this to get their panties in a wad about it.
Well, the ones that did it, I'm going to say big time stick in the mud, because Featherstone went on to say that we had the landing traffic. We had to deconflict from what I felt was sandwiched a little bit. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like he's taking it pretty seriously. And... The Marine Corps even said the relief of him came as a surprise for an otherwise exceptionally performing commander with a long distinguished career. It's necessary to enforce a standard that is vital to the Third MA, produces strong and effective leadership to promote operational excellence. And they went on to say, and this is obvious for anybody who's actually served, but we have a lot of people who haven't served that listen to the podcast. whenever you're relieved as a squadron level commander, your career is over. You can't go on to another place. This guy will never pin on Colonel ever. He was relieved as a squadron commander. That is effectively the end of his career.
It sucks, too, because he admits, he's like, yeah, it seems like it was pretty serious in the end. But he's like, I was just paying attention to, like, the aircraft that was landing and not on where my pilot was flying. Like, I wasn't, like, he's just sitting in the back seat and he gets totally fucked.
And it's he's like, not even control, right? Like, he's not even control.
Right, he's not flying the plane.
Like, if we got a bicycle built for three and the three of us are cruising around Daytona Beach and Chaps is driving and he says, Jesus, take the wheel and let's go, you know? And then I get fired for it in the rear, you know?
I respect though, very that similar. He stood up and said, all right, this is on me. I know I wasn't flying. I know there was nothing, you know, that I physically could have done, but this ultimately lands on my plate.
Should we offer him a job? His
quote was, I can't tell you why the pilot descended. Obviously, I'm unhappy with the way things turned out, but as commander, I'm ultimately responsible. If deemed outside the box, I am responsible. And I think that that's a good lesson in leadership. Mm-hmm. It's just one that stinks. Like, just tell the, like, you can't fire everybody for something so stupid. Nobody got hurt. Just talk to them off the record. Let them move on and do things. Like, that's a lot of experience in that field that's now out the window because you want to set the example. You don't have to make your last ditch stand in the wrong ditch there, whoever's in charge.
Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Featherstone, if you're listening, we do this radio show 5 to 6 p.m. ET every night. We could use somebody. We know you can fly, but if you can talk about duty balls and farts and stuff like that, we could use somebody. So
President Trump has been known to intervene in a lot of different areas that some military veterans say that maybe he shouldn't, like some of these war pardons that we've had, like the war crime pardons. This is a spot where I would say this would be good. If this comes across his Twitter radar and it comes into his feed and says this guy was fired for something silly like that, reinstate him. Just do it. Yeah. That would be actually one that deserved it.
Exercise a little discretion, because if he's had a really distinguished career, you know this is not the norm for him. He's not some, like, boot aviator who's just been on, you know, around the block one time. He's been around a long time, so I don't know. It just seems like a little too far of a punishment for someone who's as accomplished as he is.
And the last note, anytime you can keep around somebody who has an oxymoron name, you have to do it. You got to keep a guy named Featherstone.
Featherstone? Yeah, he's needed.
All right, let's move on to round three.
Round number three, not quite comparable, but it reminded me. On Netflix, I've been watching that Devil Next Door about the guy who was Ivan the Terrible. He was a Nazi who, I think at Auschwitz, he was like in charge of the gas chambers, like this horrible fucking guy who tortured people and was just tons of witness accounts, completely evil guy. Well, somehow he disappears, and like decades and decades and decades later, it turns out he's been living in Ohio, in this little suburb of Cleveland or whatever, a church-going guy with a family and very well-liked, a neat, tidy little yard. And all these people were like, oh, my God, we've been living next to a fucking Nazi this entire time. Mm-hmm. Holy shitballs. And, like, one of the worst ones. The story
and that's
is crazy.
Why I think that Lieutenant Aldo Rain was exactly right whenever he said that he is going to put the swastika on their foreheads with a knife, because you can take off that little Nazi uniform, but you're going to blend into society, not with Lieutenant Aldo Rain and the Apache ready to take your scalp.
Exactly. Yeah. But on a slightly different, very different vein, but like kind of a similar dip out from war and wind up somewhere unexpected. There's a story this week coming out of Arizona that was covered by the Washington Post. Federal authorities say they have arrested a Phoenix area man suspected of killing two men as a leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq 14 years ago. And at the end of this story, they're interviewing people who are like, well, he was my driving instructor here, like goofy teens who are like, what? So it turns out they had no idea the guy sitting next to them in driver's ed is Al-Qaeda leader. So just fucking crazy. But the Justice Department said that 42-year-old Ahmed Al-Nouri appeared before a magistrate judge on Friday for proceedings to extradite him back to Iraq. The government there has charged him with two counts of murder in the killings in Fallujah in 2006. They say he and other members of Al-Qaeda shot and killed a lieutenant and an officer in the Fallujah Police Department back then. That June in 2006, he was one of six masked men who pulled up in front of a store. And there they took out Assam Hussein, a first lieutenant in the local police force. A witness said that Ahmed, who was not wearing a mask, pulled out a gun, told the men to leave the police officer alone, and then they all changed their minds. They killed the police officer. Then, not too long after that, they did it again. They parked in front of another police officer in Fallujah, and this time they all got out and they killed Officer Ibrahim Muhammad. So they said that he was a carpenter known for conducting assassination operations on members of the police force. So these two killings are what they know he did because of many witnesses, but the Definitely. Odds are good. He was an Al-Qaeda leader who was known for being an assassin. So gunning down officers.
That's not the guy you want hanging your drywall.
No, no, it's not.
For a dude that has a reputation of being an assassin and going out and just knocking off cops, that's not the dude that you want out there. But the story is it picks up from there because this guy, I don't know how you do this. Like that, what you just talked about in The Devil Next Door and now with this story, how do you pop up in the United States and you're living a normal life? Like, to me, that is insane because this is now 12 years after the fact. He got to the Phoenix in 2008 as a refugee, and now he was involved in a large Iraqi immigrant community in Phoenix, and many people knew them. Like, there was an 18-year-old who was interviewed by the Washington Public via the Arizona Republic, and she said there is, like, no way, because she had taken driving courses from this. This guy, she went on to say that he's a very hardworking guy and he was a really good guy. So people liked him. He was in his community. He was doing things. He had just gotten married and he had a kid and he was excited about bachelor life before recently getting married and all that type of stuff. They even said that he was known to love animals and planned to build a little farm on a property near Phoenix. This just sounds like the nicest fella who immigrated here, like, to escape a war-torn Iraq, and next thing you know, it's revealed that he was part of that.
Listen to this final...
How do you put that aside?
Several people who had come to know him since he came to the United States as a refugee in 2008 struggled to understand the serious allegations leveled against the 42-year-old. He became a U.S. citizen about 2 years ago, had embraced an exciting bachelor's life, and then he got married and had his first child this year. He loved animals, planned to build a little farm on a property near Phoenix, and it's like before that he was an Al-Qaeda assassin. So my only thought is that at the height of it all, because the U.S., you know, we have our bats and hides, however faulty that is, and we keep track of all sorts of people and everything, was that because these were carried out on Iraq police and it didn't affect American troops or anything like that, that he just went under the radar, was obviously they never caught him, so there was no record of that having been him. But finally, as things are going forward, like, I wonder what the straw was that this got brought up, because it's 14 years later. Like, what was it that brought this back up again? And maybe it was witnesses and going back through old cases and people being like, oh yeah, remember this guy killing so and so, where is he now? Like, I'm just curious to know how they found him again, but it's crazy.
You have stories like that all the time, like the former mob bosses who escape and they take on a new identity, and next thing you know that they're like a pillar in the community and they're doing great. How do you – I don't understand how you change your mindscape, your mind so much from one being not just in Al-Qaeda in Iraq but being a leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and then next thing you know, you're trying to build a little farm in Phoenix.
Well, like,
the mental gymnastics there is nuts.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people would probably say he's a classic sociopath, that he's able to compartmentalize those two parts of his life, and now he is a pillar of the community and someone that everyone believes to be a really nice fellow. So,
but if you're a sociopath, I think that you would continue doing those type of violent things and not worry about the ramifications. It seems like you could really make an argument based on these type of fellas that you really can be like a product of your environment. Maybe all it took was somebody escaping Iraq in like that type of environment where it's extremely violent, like you're prone to be involved in Al-Qaeda, and you get away and you're kind of like, huh, I'm done with this life.
No, I can see that.
It's crazy.
I bet you there were a lot of people in Iraq who felt ultimately just pressured to become part of some sort of terrorist organization.
But okay, if you do that it. Shit, though, you still got to get fucked if you get caught. Fuck.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. And also...
Well, there's just still lots of people who chose not to do those things in the same
environment. Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
And so
you're right.
There was a
We're not excusing Al-Qaeda.
Oh, so, all right. So that, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought, but that's what I was going to say. Like... the way you're saying that he's kind of really changed and he's a product of his environment now, We're not excusing all the bad things he did. We're going to still hold him accountable for that, right?
No, I just find it fascinating. I think he definitely should pay for what he did.
Okay.
I just find that kind of thing fascinating. And we see it a lot. Like, there's constantly news stories of somebody who was in jail for murder, and they escaped murder 15, 20 years ago, and now they're remarried, and they're working at, like, a Hardee's or something like that, and they've been doing
fine.
I
just listened to this NPR episode, and I'm totally paraphrasing it here because I don't remember the exact details. But these two guys were sharing this story about their landlord in New York City in the 80s who would drink too much, and they'd drop off the rent, and he'd be like, let me tell you a story. I was a bad man in Colombia, and I killed a lot of men. And they'd be like, okay, Mr. Topo, okay, sure, whatever. And they would roll their eyes. Well, like 20 years later, the two guys who used to be buddies, the one emails the other and is like, check out this fucking link. It turns out the guy had killed like hundreds and hundreds of men in Colombia. Was one of the most murderous. And then he was just their landlord who sometimes would talk what they thought was crazy when he was drunk. And they're like, oh, okay, cool story. But it turns out he was like a crazy murderer.
Well, I think there are people who really just are that sick in the head. There's a lot of stories about mob hitmen who carried on normal lives, but that was just what they did for a living. They killed people, and they were just so cold that it didn't bother them that they were taking another person's life.
Crazy.
This will be, I think this story, like Kate was saying, The Devil Next Door, I think that this will be an Amazon Prime TV show or something like that, a limited series that comes out, because this story is just too crazy not to be put on the big screen in some kind. From Al Qaeda to Phoenix, who would have
and
fucking thought
curious.
It?
And I am curious. I'm curious to know the how and the, you know, I'm curious to know the background.
Now I'm curious, though, too. I wonder if he was the only one in Phoenix, or if there's other Al-Qaeda running around Phoenix right now.
Uh-oh, conspiracy cons back at it again.
I wonder if they got the coronavirus.
What about being his wife? Like, what about your husband that you knew that was a nice driving instructor guy who was trying to start a farm, and then they're like, oh, no, he's actually a member of Al-Qaeda. You'd be like, what? What?
Then again, now that I'm listening to it, a driving instructing farmer dude, overcompensate much, nerd.
Well, I think he's going complete opposite direction of his previous life.
He builds model tanks and stuff and a little.
Yeah, maybe
the
he just
FBI
feels
goes
super
to
guilty.
Arrest him and he's sitting there bottle feeding a goat. Like,
yeah. Okay. All right, we're on to you.
All right, let's move on to round four. Round number four, let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, because before the Super Bowl started, about 20 minutes before the actual game kicked off, there was a video that featured our guy Kyle Carpenter, and he did awesome. Like, not being an actor or anything like that, but reading the preamble to the Constitution, it gave me chills watching him do it. And not just because it's the preamble of the Constitution that he was wearing the Medal of Honor, it's because we know Kyle the person and how humble he is, and I can't imagine what his response was from the NFL whenever they asked him to be a part of this video, where they explain different conflicts throughout American history. And there really was this American history that was kind of concentrated on before the actual game took place. And then right before the coin flip, they brought out four different veterans from World War II. And we really want to focus on one of them. All of them deserve to have their story told, but we want to focus on one, and that's retired Colonel Charles McGee, who just celebrated his 100th birthday in December by flying a private jet between Frederick, Maryland and Dover Air Base. Now,
holy shit.
I know a lot of olds that are like in their 80s, and I think you should not be driving a Crown Victoria, let alone a private jet.
My
100
parents,
years old flying is
my
crazy.
My parents live in a 55 and up, and every week they have these automatic garage doors, and I'm always like, every week, it's like, you can't go out this one. Somebody ran into it again. Like, they cannot get their shit together, and it's a 55 and up, so.
So we're doubling that.
Yeah,
just
crazy.
About.
Wow. So being one of the members of the famed Tuskegee Airmen, it would be very hard if the colonel came up to you and was like, hey, I want to fly this private jet. Telling him no would be a very difficult situation, but at some point, you can't fly anymore, and I think 100 might be the last time. That should be the last time that he takes place.
That's our
that
final cutoff.
Behind.
I
100.
Say he's limitless. He seems like a pretty incredible person, and I would trust him. I would trust being in a plane with him over a 55-year-old at my parents' apartment community, just trying to exit
the building. I mean, he walked out there like it was no big thing. Like, he was handling it. He was doing his thing. He was wearing his hat. He looked awesome. But we wanted to take this moment, because a lot of people might not know the story. They might know a little bit about it from the movie. But we wanted to take the moment and just remind everyone how extraordinary these men were and are. And it's incredible that we still have some of them to look at and to hear their stories firsthand. Here's the colonel in a documentary that was featured on Veterans Awareness webpage. Every time I hear the story of the Tuskegee Airmen and just really black veterans in general from World War II, it sickens me and amazes me all at the same time. Like, people who were willing to fight and die for their country that came back and they still had to deal with Jim Crow laws. Some of them still had parents who were directly involved in slavery, parents or grandparents who were directly involved in slavery. It really puts into perspective that our ugly past is not that far in the past. And if we're not careful, that we could easily slip down that slope again. And there's a lot of things that we need to do to really create and achieve racial equality. I mean, and we see that still in aspects of the military now. I mean, there's not very many black generals. There's not very many black women generals. There's not enough Medal of Honor recipients who are African American. Like, we just don't appreciate the service of people like the colonel here like we should. And I think that that's a huge lesson for us to learn. So I'm just thankful that the NFL gave us the opportunity to listen to that story and to learn a little bit more about him. I'm always interested whenever there's a story like that of these people and their names come off. I kind of Google it while I'm watching the game to see what's going on with them and what their actual background is, if they have a Wikipedia page, what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. So having the opportunity to learn about a gentleman as great as that and a legacy as great as that is something that I appreciate that happened at the Super Bowl. I was expecting to be entertained watching sports, and next thing you know, you're learning about a little bit of history of the United States.
It's really fascinating, and I found this when I was recently watching Band of Brothers, how many of these gentlemen who served in World War II and ladies have Wikipedia pages, so you can really dive deep, a little deeper than just hearing their name and what they did. And there's a lot of information.
Just also wanted to mention that his three pals that were up there with him by name, Staff Sergeant Odon Sanchez Cardenas, Lieutenant Colonel Samuel Lombardo, and Corporal Sidney Walton were accompanying him at the coin toss as well. So
look them up too.
Want to make sure to mention those three guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That was very cool that they did that. But I started watching it late. I like got wiped out again this weekend. First, I thought I was allergic to my cat.
This is the most off the radar I've ever seen you on a weekend.
Yeah, well, one, I'm banned
from Twitter.
Well,
I think it helps that you're banned from Twitter. Yeah.
One, I'm banned from Twitter. And two, I just like, you know, when you can feel yourself getting sick and all your energy has just been zapped from your body, and you feel like you're on drugs, but you're not on drugs, and you're just like, but not the fun kind. And you're just totally, and like, why am I so sweaty, man? It was just one of those like
just
weird,
gross all around,
sick, gross weekends. Mm-hmm. So I just was like a lump. But finally, like, I woke up and I was like, oh yeah, the Super Bowl is like in the second quarter right now. So I put it on and I started watching it or whatever. And I'm happy for Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for the guy, I gotta say. But it made me think of, like, we were talking about Super Bowls when we were in. And I feel like when I was younger, it was a much bigger deal. Now I'm just like, lady with a cat. But people, when you're in, we'd have these big parties. Everybody would go to, like, a staff sergeant would have everyone over to watch it. Or probably in hindsight, to keep us from getting in trouble.
Possible,
yeah.
But did you guys do big Super Bowl stuff when you were in? Did you guys?
Just different friends' houses.
My favorite Super Bowls were Super Bowl Mondays in Japan, because the Super Bowl would start at, like, I believe it was 8:30 in the morning or something like that. So we wouldn't have to go to work that day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Off,
which was – it was pretty cool, because you would wake up and you would go – you'd wake up at like 3 a.m. to go meet up with people and start drinking and shit like that. And then after the Super Bowl, it'd be over with at like noon. You could go out and go to the beach for the day. You could go scuba diving or snorkeling or something like that and just have a good time. Super Bowl Mondays were fucking dope.
That sounds awesome, actually.
I know. I love that. I'm
just
not
get
mad
a
at
full
that at all.
Monday off and to watch the game. That is excellent.
Now, as a football player yourself, Cons, was that a big deal when you were in? Or like,
yeah, no. There was always somebody having a big party at their house just so we could all have a reason to get together, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
So we took to our social media channels to ask some of our pals, like, what was the best spot that you had to, or the worst spot that you had to watch the Super Bowl in? And we'll start off with John Tumavicious, I guess.
Tumavicious.
Too much.
Let's go with that one. He said he is currently eating a bowl of oatmeal with some powdered eggs in the finest corner of Southwest Asia. He's not even mad about that part, though. He said, I'm stuck watching AFN commercials instead of the real ones.
Oh,
that is so true.
Yes.
Because you look forward to, I don't think it's as big of a deal as it used to be because so many of them leak beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Bowl commercials used to be huge. And I remember when I first got to Okinawa in 2007, that was my first Super Bowl there. Or no, 2004 or 5. And whenever I first watched, I was like, what the fuck is this? They're doing a commercial about the E-Club here on Kadena Air Base?
Yeah,
like, this
Sharky.
Is bullshit. Why do we have to watch the same commercials? That was very, very disappointing.
Yeah, I had a similar, except my oatmeal, well, actually, it wasn't made with my own urine this time, but I had a bowl of oatmeal, and shout out to Willie Colon. That was the Super Bowl he won was the one I watched in Iraq.
Ah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Watching
there you
it
go.
Up
That's
there.
Yeah,
one.
But the AFN commercials, just horrible, because there's
brutal.
Only like three of them, and they just repeat each time.
None of them really stood out to me last night. You're right. Evan Brown, 86, said, watch floor in Afghanistan, months-old Halloween candy and Xmas junk people constantly sent us. Mainline enough Rippets, and you can kind of get a buzz, I guess. So instead of having beer at the Super Bowl, just chugging Rippets, trying to get wherever you're stationed in Afghanistan, trying to enjoy it somehow, some way. That would be tough to have no seven-layer dip at the Super Bowl. You know, that's a tough
It would be.
Tough look.
It is.
Brandon Papp says that he watched Super Bowl 50 through the cruise mess window of an LSV while on watch at Kuwait's naval base. He said the food was monster and cowboy killers. At least the Broncos won. I
what
bet
are
you
cowboy
are
killers?
Marlboro Reds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're sitting next to a former smoker of them. Now I just do the lights. So, yeah, that's a tough one. A lot of people and the cute pictures. Last year in the middle of the South China Sea, crowded hangar bay, so we watched in our small shop the ship version of pizza and wings. No alcohol, had to go straight to cleaning stations after. Worth it. That was from at the Chris Hill.
That was another thing that it reminded me of. In 2009, we got shipped actual beer, and everyone was supposed to get two real beers as opposed to the near beer that they have in Iraq. And I just thought to myself, the hell am I going to do with two beers?
Yeah,
I just
the
gave
point?
Them away. I'm like, what's the point? And then next thing you know, this one guy who actually Rob and I were talking about this past weekend, he's probably in jail now, Staff Sergeant Hicks. He was an interesting character. I think he went around and kind of brokered a deal that he got everybody's extra beer. So he ended up
Brilliant.
With like 20 beers for himself.
That's the way to go. I think it really has to suck. The anecdotes I hear most are when their team was in the Super
yep.
Bowl or the World Series, and that's when they were deployed. When the Phillies won the World Series, I was on a plane going to my duty station, so I couldn't watch it. I totally missed it, and that was like, that super sucked. And
one
then
guy
the
actually
worst
mentioned
FOMO.
That on the Twitter feed. He said that he was watching the Super Bowl where he was a Seahawks fan, and he was watching the Super Bowl where they were against the Patriots, and whenever they're down at the 2-yard line at the end of the game, Russell Wilson drops back to pass, and then it started to buffer, and it didn't come back for like 5.5 minutes after the interception. So they were all sitting there, no Twitter feeds, no internet or anything like that. They had no idea what happened. That's got to be the longest 5 minutes of your sports life, waiting to figure out what happened. And then to find out that your team lost on that play when you could have just handed it to Marshawn Lynch and scored has got to be gutting on the open seas.
Part of me, though, like, I know a real fan would want their team to win no matter what, but a little part of me would have so much FOMO if my team won and, like, all your friends are at the parade and everybody's getting hammered.
Partying
and you're
in the
like,
street right after.
You're on watch in the boonies somewhere, like, fuck, yeah.
That was probably by far the hardest part of being in the military as social media kind of grew. I mean, it was mostly Facebook and a little bit of MySpace when I was in Twitter and Instagram came a lot later, but just seeing all the things you were missing out on. It used to be you missed out on things, you didn't think about it because you didn't see it, but to see all the pictures of your friends having a good time at birthdays, at parties, at celebrations, that was tough. We should get some sort of an award for being in the military as the rise of social media.
I would have loved to see that from Cons now with this Twitter following now. If Cons had to do a deployment now, they'd be like, oh, hope you guys are having fun at the Super Bowl party.
Yeah.
I'm still over here in Afghanistan.
So hot.
Probably.
Cons would be the ultimate make it about me guy. He'd be the dude that was posting the pictures of while you're worried about your dumb little college exams, I'm out here doing firefights.
Doing firefights. Put that on a t-shirt. Just busy doing firefights.
Yeah, we got a lot of great responses. We'll post some more of those. Super Bowl is always a good time, even if you are overseas. Because you do have those times where you bond together and you form memories that you'll remember where you're at, even if it is in a shitty place like being... like one guy said that he had to crowd into the commanding officer of their submarine ship to go and watch a little AFN feed from time to time. And they had a drawing, he said, that where they had to do six people got to go into the room at a time and you had to draw for your time block. And some people got like minute two through minute four. And like the second quarter was the time that they got to go in and watch the Super Bowl. That would really suck. You kind of did that with the Phillies one whenever you had the Bird Box.
You had to wear a blindfold. Yeah, every time the ball changed hands, you had to switch blindfolds. You could, and other people had to explain the game to you, but you couldn't see it. So yeah, that was a tough one. But crazy all around. Mm-hmm. Good for the Chiefs.
Shout out to everyone who is deployed though and had to watch in some crowded MWR or an office that just didn't have anywhere comfortable to sit. Thinking about you,
indeed.
No doubt. Let's move into a little bit of save rounds and alibis. We'll start with you, Bren. What do you got?
Shout out Ben Garland, who was also one of the 49ers who won. Oh, well, he made the Super Bowl, but he lost. He was in the Air Force. That's probably why they lost. Also, who won, Shakira or J-Lo? I'm really interested because me and the 10 guys that I watched the Super Bowl with, I mean, they're almost punches thrown over arguing who won the ass off last
night. Well, who got right up on the camera and did this?
That's a good point.
That was Shakira, and she won. I don't know, you and your friends.
All right, what about you, Cons?
I had something, but we already discussed it, so I got nothing.
There we go.
For me, okay. Check out ZBT social media or Dave Portnoy's blog today. He wrote about a Marine sergeant named Cody Howard, who was involved in a tragic snowmobile accident in Canada. Cody suffered a level 4 aortic dissection. His survival of the injury, there was 9-hour surgery afterwards. Then there was delays in getting him more help. So now his kidneys are failing. He's lost the use of his legs. He has a wife and a young son. And he is covered by the VA, but they've denied him coverage because the accident happened in Canada and not the U.S. So this poor young guy has these catastrophic injuries. He's going to be – it's going to take a lot of medical work, but he'll be able to continue to live his life. Mm-hmm. But there's a GoFundMe up for him right now. It's
because so far his bills are up to $300,000.
Yeah, his bills are up to $300,000 right now. So this is a former Marine sergeant, and so Dave Portnoy posted it up today. And he was saying, too, it's tough. We all get a ton of, can you help us, you know, put out this donation and blah, blah. And we want to say yes to them all. But if you do, then nobody donates to anything. You have to pick and choose. And he felt that this was a very worthy cause. We agree. So check out. He's got an 11-month-old son, a wife, and he needs some help. So his GoFundMe will be up on our page and a couple other places on the site. So.
Yeah, we were saying before the show, I had no idea that if you got hurt outside of the U.S.
I didn't know that either.
The VA just won't cover you. Doesn't matter what it is, which I thought was silly because just because I'm not in the United States doesn't change the fact that I'm still a veteran.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was unaware. Also, I saw 1917 this weekend and holy shitballs. I mean, the entire movie, it's almost 2 hours long. Just the filmography of it. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but...
Cinematography.
13 takes. 13 shots of an incredible... You follow these two British soldiers as they go on this journey, and it never leaves them. It follows the whole way through. It's incredibly shot. It was such a cool... In the end, I had tears streaming down my face, but it's just an incredible story of what soldiers do for the person to their left and their right. And a little bit of a message to Garcia vibe, too. Get the message. Mm-hmm. You're given a mission. Carry it out, man. Finish it no matter what. So it was really powerful. And it was cool. The director of the film created this film with writers based off stories his grandfather told him. His grandfather, Alfred, had been in World War, had been in that war. So it was just World War I. It was crazy, pretty interesting, and really very humbling to watch that film. So it was a good one.
Yeah, World War One. Anything about World War One? I think because balls. World War Two is like so talked about now, and World War One is so much in the distance. The things that you see from World War One are absolutely horrific.
Oh yeah,
just horrific.
It was pretty crazy.
I can't imagine it. It's
yeah, and it's just obviously it's not as prominent in film and entertainment just because of the fact that we just don't have the same amount of records that we do for later wars, starting with World War II. So I think it was interesting to see such a large-scale movie made about World War One.
I would recommend it, though. It was on the edge of my seat literally the entire time, and it was just pretty neat movie. So
is that going to be required watching for the rest of the podcast, or are we going to wait and maybe do a podcast review of it?
We'll see. I also saw a little article that the Afghanistan papers were going to be turned into a series too. So I'm excited to see what that is. Hopefully it won't be bad as The Code. Other than that, we'll see you guys on Friday. Sound the retreat.